This is the Tribe and Dish Podcast,
part of the 16 Win the Ring Network.
Talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy.
We hadn't even started yet!
To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
Part of what makes him such a good defender is his ability to switch, his ability to contest that three-point shot even when he is 7 feet away from it to run out and close out on the shooter.
Kevin Rayfuse.
If Russell Westbrook averages a triple-double for the season and his team makes the playoffs, I don't know how it can be anyone other than him.
And Justin Kuzite.
I know, I just feel like they got this guy and he's just been injured since. Like, I'm curious to see how they work him into lineups. Like, they've gotten so used to not having him. Like, how do they end up using him?
The Drive and Dish Podcast.
We start right now.
It's a somber day here at the Drive and Dish NBA Podcast. If you've been a fan of the show and you've been listening for the last couple of weeks, really, you've been, I think, noticing that it's been tough to get the three of us in a room together. I think you know there's a lot of different things going on with our lives right now. Some of you have seen this on Twitter already because apparently he doesn't know how to keep stuff from leaking anymore. He's leaking his own information. Tim Tompkins, my esteemed co-host, is making this is his final episode of the Drive and Dish NBA Podcast.
3 years, 400 episodes later.
I can't believe it's been 400 episodes.
Is it 400? Like, I had a count, and it was, I feel like it's got to be, because I think the last time I counted was May of last year, and we were at, like, 350?
Well, I got to say, like, I kind of disappointed with the communication here on that one. We didn't even know you were leaving until I woke up and I saw some tweets.
Well, it's better than what I did in my last relationship, which is end that by ghosting her. So at least with you guys.
I'll be honest, I've ghosted a girl before.
Why would Tim admit to doing that on this podcast?
I'm not going to lie, I've done it too.
We're going to have it. We may have to. Well, Tim's leaving now, so we can't have an old school Drive and Dish intro talk about ghosting, because that would be a fun one.
I want to get your reactions, though. You guys wake up, you know, depending on what time zone you're in, but you wake up, it was about 7:30 in the morning, our time.
Yep.
And you get on Twitter and you read the tweet announcing that I am leaving the Drive and Dish Podcast. But obviously, I wish you both well in your future endeavors. And what were your initial thoughts?
So I woke up after you had tweeted it a little bit. So there was some interaction. And the first response was, well, this is going to be a Sixers podcast. And I was like, damn, guys, you can't even give us the, you know, benefit of the doubt that we'll be able to stay neutral. Although I will say, when me and Kevin get in a room and start talking basketball, it's very hard not to go over to Sixers. So,
well, it comes back to that once in a while. I feel like the last few episodes we've been really good. I mean, the Dallas episode with Taman, the only reason we talked about the Sixers is because we just traded Nerlens Noel them. And, you know, like, things happen. My first reaction was, I guess the process has finally worn him out. It's broken him. For what it's worth, it's kind of broken me too. It's tough, man. You know, I'm glad Tim is here for his final episode. I'm glad that, you know, you're willing to come on and have this one more time. It's you know, it's been a fun 3 years.
Well, here's the thing is that I have this other podcast I've been doing, which I had to leave because you guys don't want to talk about the Suns nearly enough for me. So I had to go do another podcast called The Sun Solar Panel. Shameless self-plug right there. And that's why I just want to make sure that I can dedicate 100% of my attention
to the Suns.
I guess we should say we've been going at this long enough. No, not leaving. April Fools. Ha ha ha.
Oh, wait a minute. I had a whole, like.
Here's the other thing. What if they're not listening on April 1st?
Well, I didn't feel like they were going to. Well, today is April 1st, so, like, it's already going to be past it.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
well, Tim already the thing is, Tim tweeted this morning. You know, a few people knew what it was right away. We had a few people actually tweet us and genuinely like, oh, my God, Tim is leaving.
And then one person liked
not.
It. And one person
liked it. Really? Like, I was like, what the hell, man? Come on.
That's funny. I was laughing at that.
Justin and I appreciated all the people who said that it was just going to turn into a giant Sixers podcast.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the last few games of the Sixers not playing. Yeah, Tim is doing the solar panel. That is a correct and factual thing. You guys should listen to it if you aren't already. Drive and Dish Podcast forever. Welcome, I guess we should finally say, to the Drive and Dish NBA Podcast. My name is Kevin Rayfuse. Joining me to my left, my co-host, who is staying and continuing to co-host the show, Tim Tompkins.
Ball don't lie, but I got to tell you what, I'm in my new podcast studio right now, which I love talking about. I have so much technology going on, like multiple monitors. I got this board over here. Kevin's hooked up on the FaceTime, or excuse me, on the Skype video. Justin, I have you attached to the top of my monitor.
I see
with,
that.
My second monitor.
Yeah.
It's really this glorious thing. I wish people understood where we came from.
To get to this point,
it's really impressive, and it took a really long time. And what's so funny about it was that it wasn't really all that difficult. There's just not a damn manual for podcasting out there.
There really isn't. Well, there really isn't.
It's not done though. The next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to get a TV in here, and I'm going to hook up a Super Nintendo with NBA Jam.
Nice.
I'm waxing you when I get back on Super Nintendo.
We will see about that.
I'll be there in 3 weeks. Like, that is a promise. In 3 weeks, listeners, tweet Tim and I and ask us how this game went and ask Tim how he's feeling. You heard it here first.
We're going to have to Facebook Live it.
Absolutely. I'm down. I'm willing to put it on the line. But behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, our producer, Justin Kuzart.
We've come long ways together, winning as a team, and I trust that my teammates will keep it going until I'm back. Hashtag Rip City.
I feel like this is obvious, right?
It's Nurkic. Very obvious one, which I'm sure we'll be talking about at some point today. That injury.
Yeah, that injury news stinks.
They'll be fine.
You think?
You guys, I have the schedule right in front of me. I can tell you the difference.
All right, well, hang on. We got some stuff to do. We save for the podcast.
Save for the podcast. This doesn't count. But the one thing we do like to do is there's nothing better, or there's nothing more you can do for this podcast than to give us a review on iTunes. It really helps people find out about the show.
All right, this week we've got one. It's from America. It is a 5-star review by Eric Spyropoulos. Shout out to Eric one time. He's a great guy. And the review says, the guys really know their stuff and deliver it in a fun, unique way. Also have great guests on the show and talk about a wide variety of topics. It's a 5-star review.
Oh, well, thank you very much. We do talk about a wide variety of topics.
Because we are wide open on this podcast.
Yes.
I don't know how to take any of that. So I'm just going to say thank you, Eric. Check out the 94 Feet Report.
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now. If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
All right, first in your news, terrible story for Derrick Rose. He has suffered a torn meniscus. Rose will undergo surgery and have a 6 to 8 week recovery period. Rose will be a free agent this offseason for the first time in his career. Rose finishes the season averaging 18 points, 3.8 rebounds, 4.4 assists in 64 games. He had a PER of 17.1, which is the highest total since his All-Star season. If you'll remember, he tore his meniscus back in 2013 as well. The Bucks have signed Gary Payton II to a multi-year contract. Payton is 24 years old, appeared in 49 games, all starts, by the way, with the Rio Grande Valley Vipers of the D-League, and averaged 14 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals in about 32 minutes per game, shooting about 49% from the field. The Bucks have waived Terrence Jones. He's 25 years old, signed to a contract in March, and appeared in 3 games for the Bucks. He was previously on the Pelicans. Sending a huge shout-out to Tracy McGrady. He's been voted into the Basketball Hall of Fame. McGrady led the NBA in scoring for 2002 to 2003 and 2003 to 2004 for the Magic. He was a 7-time All-Star during his 15-year NBA career. Two terrible news stories coming out for the Sixers. Jahlil Okafor shut down for the remainder of the season with knee soreness. He's been experiencing this for most of the season. Also, Robert Covington out for the season with a torn meniscus. Just saying, at some point, you got to start looking at the medical staff. And that's your news for this week.
Something.
What's up? It's Justin here for SeatGeek. Wanted to tell you about this app. You'll always get the best deals on every ticket because SeatGeek price compares for you by searching multiple ticket sites. Price can vary depending on where you shop, but SeatGeek is gonna have the lowest one, and it'll be marked by a green, yellow, or red dot. Obviously, green being best price, red being you're gonna pay a little too much. For every ticket, SeatGeek backs their 100% guarantee. That way, you know when you buy the tickets, you will be getting getting into the show or concert or game that you are trying to get into. Tim, Kevin, and myself are all planning to go down to Orlando this weekend to see the Pacers and Magic play. You know we're going to be checking out SeatGeek to find the best deals that we can to get ourselves into that game. And right now, the Drive and Dish has teamed up with SeatGeek to get you $20 back on your first purchase. All you have to do is download the app. It is free for you in your app store. It's called the SeatGeek app. Go to the settings tab, click on add a promo code, enter the promo code DISH. That's D-I-S-H. I don't think capital or lowercase matters. Enter it in and you will save $20 on your first purchase. You don't have to be buying tickets right there and then. You can put in the promo code and it will save over until you actually do buy your first tickets. It's the SeatGeek app. It's free in your app store if you want to get the best value for your tickets that you're trying to buy.
Obviously, we're going to be talking about the playoff picture coming up. Really likely that the Bulls are going to get it. You're moving Mirotić to the four. No Dwayne Wade. And all of a sudden, this Bulls team is actually really damn good. You know, Rajon Rondo has even been lighting it up.
All right, really damn good. All right.
they have been the Chicago Bulls since no Dwayne Wade and since they traded Taj Gibson and put Mirotić as the starting four. They have been a much better team.
Like, Rondo had 15 assists the other night.
Rondo's been killing it. Also, can we talk about really quickly that the Bulls have won 20 straight TNT games?
Yeah, dude, that's the impressive. TNT Bulls are like, that's a thing now on NBA Twitter, the TNT Bulls. And they are they swept the Cavaliers this year, who they probably would play.
Did you did you see that meme that was going around? It was a picture of Jimmy Butler twice, and it says the guy you want your daughter to meet, and it's just Jimmy Butler on any TV game, and it says Jimmy Butler and it's just the TNT sign. It says the guy your dad doesn't want you to date. It's the same thing. It's a good meme.
I'm telling you, man, it's been lit af fam on NBA Twitter with these Chicago Bulls, but I don't really want to talk about that. What I want to talk about is something that I thought was great, and we want to see more of this from the NBA. But the Bulls matched Chance the Rapper's $1 million donation to Chicago Public Schools.
Yeah, this was awesome. They just did this the other day. Chance did it a few weeks ago, just donating $1 million to public schools. I mean, hey, here's the thing. Public education is really important.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a product of public education. Justin's a product of public education. Tim's a product of public education. Like, it's important to keep schools funded.
I don't know for great examples.
We're great, upstanding citizens. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Homeschooled for a year, just FYI, guys.
Were you really?
Well, a year.
Oh. It was a long year.
We're going to have to talk about that one time. I genuinely didn't know that.
The Pelicans are getting their own D-League franchise by 2018-2019. One Florida city is in play. No, it is unfortunately not Jacksonville. But about 14 cities right now are in play for the Pelicans D-League franchise.
It's a matter of time before the NBA has done a really good job in the last few years of getting the D-League the G-League more exposure. And it's really becoming a true minor league system almost for the NBA. More and more teams are picking these teams up, and it's a matter of time. I'm glad the Pelicans are on board. I'm sure Pelicans fans are going to appreciate that. And like I said, it's a matter of time before every single one of these teams has a D-League affiliate, and they should. And with the new money coming in, they can hopefully start paying these guys comparable salaries, so a lot of the borderline talent doesn't bolt overseas.
And the one thing that I liked what they're doing is they're obviously picking the teams close enough to their actual NBA affiliate. That way, if they do need to call up a player, it's like right there, they can pull them in. That's what the Orlando Magic were trying to do, is that way the players can just jump back and forth, practice with the team, and they're ready to jump right in.
That's how they need it to be. Like, they need to be accessible for emergencies and stuff like that.
And this is something I feel very strongly about.
Oh, no.
Is it a dunk or is it a slam dunk?
I got this. It is a dunk if you just kind of like, you go up and you just, you just put it in. You make sure it goes in. You follow it through the whole time. It's a slam dunk when you do something like what Blake Griffin does or LeBron James does or Russell Westbrook does when he goes up and you just frickin' slam it down the frickin' basket. Like, that's a slam dunk. There is a difference.
I don't really think there's a difference. I mean, I feel like it's technically a slam dunk. But it's a dunk. Like, everybody just calls it a dunk because you feel like saying a slam dunk every time. Like, Steph Curry gets the lane and throws down that once a year when he throws down. It's just like, you know, a tiny dunk. It's not like he rocked the rim or something.
That's what I'm saying. Only the ones that rock the rim and really bring the house down are the slam dunks, in my opinion.
Because I hear it on NBA broadcasts, and they're like, a slam dunk. And I just think to myself, no one calls it slam dunk anymore, man. Come on.
No, but you can't just say dunk a billion times either. Like, you have to switch it up. Variety is the spice of life.
Variety is the spice of life. So we are coming up. It is close to the end of the season.
Yeah.
And we put up a tweet on our Twitter. That was repetitive. We tweeted out at Drive and Dish Podcast, talking about history, talking about the MVP race, and we got quite the reaction from people. Ooh. And my initial thoughts was, holy hell, people are really, really – people are almost as passionate about this MVP race as Justin is to the Rookie of the Year award.
Hey, now, we were having a good conversation about the Rookie of the Year award.
Would you like tweeting back and forth, you and I, Justin? I was thinking, is he getting angry?
No, I was having fun.
I was looking at Snotty's mentions, and I just, like, Snotty tweeted once, and then you guys went on for 12 more, and I'm like, he hasn't responded again. Like, you guys can tweet each other, you know?
He's like, let him out of it.
Change the way that you respond to people, you reply to people now?
Yeah.
And it's like really confuses me.
But it also makes it so you can have more text. So you have your full 140 characters instead of wasting it on people's at handles.
And I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So one thing that has been heating up that people feel very, very strongly about, I guess we should preface this by saying, yes, there are four people in contention for the MVP. For the sake of this conversation, we're going to talk about the two people that are actually in contention for the MVP.
Right.
Russell Westbrook, James Harden.
It's clear, like, I know who both of you want to be MVP, and so I want to let you argue them each first, and then I'll let you know what I think. So, Tim, you're firmly in the Russell Westbrook camp, so why do you think it should be Russ?
You feel very strongly about this, not nearly as strongly as Justin does, but I'm talking about Russell Westbrook, number one in PER, number one in value over replacement player, number one in the NBA in box plus minus. 39 triple-doubles. When Russell Westbrook gets a triple-double, the Oklahoma City Thunder are 30-9. So there is a direct correlation to his triple-doubles and the success of the team. You want to talk about clutch minutes for Russell Westbrook. Games where the Oklahoma City Thunder are within 5 points in the last 5 minutes, therefore defining a clutch game, the Oklahoma City Thunder are 22-14. Harden and the Rockets are 20-15. In my opinion, that shows that Russell Westbrook is more important to his team when it comes to what he does than James Harden. He averages 32 points in less minutes compared to James Harden's 29. He averages, obviously, a triple-double, 10 points, 11 rebounds. If you want to talk about the argument for Harden being he's a more efficient player, fine. I get that. But if you are going to throw in the argument that Harden is a better assist player, that he sets up his teammates more, that is not true. Harden's assist percentage is 52% compared to Russell Westbrook's assist percentage at 56%. And that being said, Russell Westbrook hardly has a person to dish to. He also just did 5 straight triple doubles.
I mean, it does feel like, for the narrative's sake, that it has shifted back to Russ a little bit within the last week, especially with that game against the Magic, you know, just the obscene triple double. The highest scoring triple-double in NBA history. And I'll go to Justin now, because Justin, while Tim is firmly on the Russell Westbrook bandwagon, Justin is fully on the James Harden for MVP bandwagon. Mm-hmm. So, Justin, plead your case.
So, let me start this by asking a question. Would Westbrook be considered in the MVP voting if he wasn't averaging a triple-double? For example, yes. just say his assists over Harden, though. If he wasn't averaging a triple-double, would he be considered MVP over Harden? Are we going to give him the MVP because of 2 extra rebounds a game? Because that's what he's beating him in. He's averaging more points, yes. Rebounds is the only reason he's got a triple-double over Harden. Harden is 2 rebounds away from also having a triple-double on the season. So that's just my overall question in general. Before I get into it, that's one of my actual questions.
Well, if the only area in which Russell Westbrook was beating him in was rebounds, and I would say no, given the advanced statistics that Russell Westbrook leads, and considering he's also the number one scorer in the NBA, No, that's not the only reason.
Because the whole thing with Westbrook right now, in my opinion, is the triple-double stats. Everyone's talking about it. People are now starting to say that the team's specifically going out of the way to pad his stats. I saw a thing. I don't have anything to back that up. I just saw some articles starting to come out about that. I don't know how true it is. But I then bring up the question, Harden is the best player, and Tim, this was your argument for, I believe, Curry 2 years ago. Harden is the best player on a better team. They're the third best team in the NBA right now. Westbrook, while yes, he's averaging a triple-double and he has those numbers, is behind the Clippers, the Jazz, the Rockets, obviously the Spurs, the Warriors, the Wizards, the Raptors, the Cavs, and the Celtics. They are only one game ahead of the Bucks in wins. So you're looking at a team led by Westbrook who is not better than any of those teams except for the Bucks and the Grizzlies. He's a little bit better than both of those guys. That has to come into account, right?
While it does, and I completely agree with you, if we are going to debate this upon the best player on the best team, then neither Harden nor Westbrook should even be in this conversation, and we should only be looking at the Warriors.
No, because then I would bring up the question, should playing every single game factor into being the MVP?
Every single game? No. Taking a 2 week stint to rest? Yes.
So then I would also say that could factor in against LeBron and Curry and even Kawhi, although I don't think it's Kawhi's choice. I think it's Pop who's sitting him.
Kawhi's been doing everything for the Spurs this year. I don't want to say that Kawhi... I mean, look, LeBron is resting. We know LeBron is the best player in the league. When LeBron feels like playing, it's different with LeBron. You could argue LeBron every single year for MVP. We all know this. The fact of the matter is, I think we all know that he's not going to win MVP this year, even though he's playing some of the best ball of his career. I mean, he's averaging career highs in rebounds and assists per game this year. A few Harden numbers that we haven't mentioned yet, because I do want to paint the picture there to show just how close this is. Harden is leading the league right now in offensive win shares, in total win shares. He is ahead of Westbrook in win shares per 48. Right behind him for total box plus minus. Harden is leading the league in assists per game right now. He's also the league leader in a total assists for this season. And Harden, of course, we know is elite at getting to the free throw line, taking the most free throws and making the most free throws on the season. And I think there's something to be said about that level to his game. You know, we always have had the argument in the past of, you know, Harden does get a lot of quote unquote cheap points, and maybe that'll hurt him come playoff time. We'll have to see. But, you know, Harden, it is a skill when you get to the league at the rate that Harden does. If it wasn't a skill, everybody would do it equally. You know, I think there's something to be said about that. I know both of you are firmly in this camp. My intro quote, I think everybody knows by now, is I don't know how you pick against Russell Westbrook when he's averaging a triple-double and his team makes the playoffs. I said that prior to the season. I've been rocking with that all year. I'm not about to change it. And it sounds like a cop-out, and it's going to be lame. They've got to be co-MVPs. Like, for what both of those two mean to their respective teams. I think the Rockets without Harden are a fringe playoff team, where now they're in the elite possible contender status. I think the Thunder without Westbrook are a high lottery team. I think you talk about guys who are the total focal points of everything their team does. The ball is always in their hands, whether they're setting guys up, whether they're grabbing boards, whether they're just putting up these ridiculous... I mean, you're talking about guys that both this season have had triple-doubles of 50 or more points. That's bananas.
Twice. Both of them done it twice.
Right. And so, you know, there's something to be said about Westbrook's triple-double numbers. I don't want to downplay that. I know there are people who say he cherry-picks stats and that they're, you know, they're basically stat padding him at this point, but I don't buy that as an excuse to knock him off this award. But I also think, you know, Harden has had that good of a season, and I can't not give him that credit. It's been that on the level of everything Westbrook has done this season. For the record, I think Harden is going to win the award. I think the narrative is shifted, but I'm going off the executive poll and a few other things that have come out. I think Harden is probably the favorite to win this award. I think it should be co-MVPs this year. And it sounds lame, and I feel lame for thinking it should be split among two people and not picking one. But I just think what these two have done this season is so incredible that they both deserve the recognition.
Let me just intervene for a second to just throw out some other stats about Harden, because I think we're not giving him true justice. Tim, you were talking about how Westbrook scores more than Harden, while I agree, and he does it in less minutes, I believe you said as well. While that's true, Harden's usage rate is about almost 7% less. So I thought that was also something that should be factored into that. He has a 27% assist ratio. Harden's true shooting percentage this year, 61%. Westbrook's is 55%. Generating points from assists, Harden is number one with 27.5 points per game. Westbrook is third behind John Wall. Westbrook is at 23.8. While, yes, that can be attributed to the players around him, I still think that comes into account. I also thought this was an interesting take. I forget who was tweeting about it, but they were talking about how the over-under line for Oklahoma City was 44. And I think for Houston, it was the same thing, like 44 and 43.5 or something like that at the beginning of the season. And obviously, the Rockets, I guess right now, have what they've won. I saw someone saying they're on pace to win like 57, somewhere around there. And the Thunder are on pace to win 47, both overachieving, but the Rockets overachieving more. And that it has to be accredited to their number one player, James Harden, no?
Well, I think a credit to Russ, too. What I think a lot of people haven't realized as well, looking at this season, is the reality is this Thunder team was built to play not just to his strengths, but to Kevin Durant's strengths. And right. You take a guy like that, of that caliber, off the team, to see Russ thrive in this, you know, to see still Russ thriving with these guys and leading to these guys well into the playoffs and, you know, in a very great Western Conference. You know, there's something to be said about that, too. They both are having historically great seasons. This is the hardest MVP vote that I remember in a long time.
Here's the reason that swung me, and Tim, not to cut you off, I saw you were about to start talking. The reason that swung me was the triple-double or bust argument, because I think, in my mind, if Westbrook doesn't average, like, everyone's freaking out about the triple doubles, and I get it. There are triple doubles. They're amazing. They're huge. And Oscar Robertson's the last person to do it, but Harden is only two behind him. So can we really give it to somebody who's doing equally, if not the same numbers, and impressive wise, I should say, you know, just because of two extra rebounds that call it a triple double?
It's an argument of being fooled by round numbers, right?
Right. I guess, yeah, in a way, yes.
Okay, and I completely agree. And I like, at the end of the day, and this has to do with sort of the rookie of the year debate that you and I, Justin, were having on right. Twitter. We aren't arguing that one player is good and one player is garbage.
Right.
At this point, we're arguing which greatness is greater.
Right.
So I think that that's important. I'm trying to remember everything you said. So you talked about points created off assists.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. He has Eric Gordon, Lou Williams, Ryan Anderson on the around the perimeter, and that's going to create more points off assists than Russell Westbrook is going to do.
Lou will at the deadline, though.
Fine. He's had 3-point shooter. They broke the record for most 3-point shots. Like, everyone around him is a shooter, so he's going to create more points off assists. So to me, that's just an invalid argument. I mean, it's great. It's good. You can't fault the guy because he has shooters around him, but you also can't hurt Russell Westbrook because, like, who's the best 3-point shooter on Oklahoma City? Victor Oladipo, 38%. That's the best. Yeah. Nobody else isn't good. If you want to talk about assist percentage, though, Russell Westbrook has a better assist percentage, 56%, compared to James Harden, 52%. Like, to me, it doesn't matter whether or not you can give this MVP to LeBron James. You can give it to Kawhi Leonard. You can give it to James Harden. I don't really give a damn, because at the end of the day, in 10 years, when we talk about this season right here, we're going to be talking about Russell Westbrook. So give it to whoever you want.
I would say that, yes, unless Houston beats the Warriors. If they go into the playoffs and beat the Warriors, James Harden is going to be the number one thing talked about.
Well, that season, I mean, I think Westbrook averaging a triple-double, to Tim's point, will be talked about longer, because I just don't really think we'll see it again anytime soon. I mean, the Robertson season was 1961. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of things have happened in the world since 1961. That's a huge notch to Harden's legacy that he would then have over Durant and Westbrook.
I mean, makes him a first ballot Hall of Famer, is the best that win right there does, whereas Russell Westbrook is etched in history. And I can't – the round number argument's great. I think you're absolutely right. Taking away from James Harden because he has two fewer rebounds, that's not – you know, that seems like a silly reason to take away from him. But we're talking about history. And I just don't think that we should be on the wrong side of history.
History has shown it's wrong to be on the wrong side of history.
That was really deep, Justin.
Yeah, it was, right?
Kevin was supposed to be the equalizer, right? Because this is a democracy on this podcast. And so
I know it is, and I can't do it. Dude, I've thought about this argument, especially once I knew you both were so firmly in your camps. I was like, okay, so I've got to be the one to break the tie. Like, I really, like, I've looked at all the numbers. I've watched highlights. Like, I really, like, had a deep, long thought or thinking session about what I was going to say here. And I can't take away from either of them. Like, when players are starting to be in favor of co-MVPs, I think they're on to something. Like, it's unprecedented, but that's how great these two have statistically been this season and how great they've been for their teams. It deserves that type of credit.
There isn't a co-MVP and they aren't going to create it. So you just have to make a decision. Imagine, Kevin, that you actually have a vote, because one day you never know, you actually have a vote. You don't get to vote for two people. It's not how it works. You have to vote for somebody. You got to pick one, man.
One of us, Kevin, will be upset at you.
I'm so torn because, like, I think the weakness is, I think Russ is more ball dominant than Harden is. Like, I think Russ is gunning for it a little bit. At the same time, like, holy crap, he's averaging a triple double, and I think Harden's supporting cast, Harden's supporting cast is much better than Westbrook's. Like,
to be fair,
the real number two option on the Thunder? Let's keep it on. Is it Oladipo? Is it Steven Adams? Like, that's not what the Rockets have. But I think, to Justin's point, there is something to be said about being that type of player, that caliber on a team that's good. Mm-hmm. They're both valid. I guess if someone held the gun to my head and said, you can't vote co-MVPs or I'm going to shoot you, I think I'd vote for Russ. I don't feel good about it. And I feel like I'm going to, in 4 hours after we record this, I'm going to say that I wish I went for Harden. But I guess for sake of having to break the tie, I got to stand by my intro quote, and I'll go with Russ.
All right. That's fair. That's fair.
It's tough, though, man.
Can we talk about the Pacers?
What about them?
Well, for one, they aren't going to make the playoffs.
They're in the eighth spot right now.
They're in it right now.
Okay. Great. I'm gonna cut that up. Remaining schedule compared to the Bulls.
And the Heat, technically. They're tied with the Heat right now. Except for there are a few games less or more in the loss column, I guess. Oh no, they're tied.
Okay. Well, let me tell you what the Bulls' remaining schedule is. Pelicans, Knicks, Sixers, Nets, Magic, Nets.
God, who scheduled that?
Let me tell you about the Pacers' remaining schedule.
Okay.
Cavs, who need a win.
Yeah, they do need to win, like, now.
Bad.
Right. So they aren't folding over on
they
that
beat
one.
The Sixers the other night, so they're not, like, they're not on the streak anymore.
Hold on.
But...
Sorry. Did you hear Kyrie? I forget who it was on the Sixers, and I don't want to get off on a tangent, but...
It was Sean Long. Sean Long threw down this dunk in the lane. He yelled. It was an emphatic dunk. Like, it was great. And Kyrie, you just hear Kyrie goes, you're down 27.
It was great. It was funny.
I mean, he's not wrong.
No, true.
Well, you know, go out there and put on a show. Come on, man. People are paying for those tickets.
Yeah.
Well, Sean Long is a D-League guy who's trying to, like, stick in the league. Like, you need those moments. So, like, look, we know.
No, we're paying for tickets, too. And it's, you know, I'm not going to get into the argument about wrestling. I feel very strongly about it for a bunch of reasons. But people are paying for those tickets. Put on a show.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah.
The Pacers' remaining schedule. Cavs, Raptors, Bucks, Magic a gimme, Sixers a gimme. Last game of the season, they're looking at the Hawks, which you could say the Hawks aren't a very good team. At the same time, the Hawks are going to be reintegrating Paul Millsap into the lineup as he's been hurt. Hawks are looking for a solid win going into the playoffs as well. I'm telling you, that Bulls closing schedule of Pelicans, no Carmelo Anthony on the Knicks, Sixers, Nets, Magic, and Nets. That is the easiest schedule I have ever seen.
Like, if you can't win the majority of those games, you don't deserve to be in the playoffs. And I'm still low key disappointed that Chicago is going to get into the playoffs. I just have no interest in watching Chicago at all in the 8th seed. Like, I'd rather watch Indy be uninspired and just continually burn Paul George's soul than watch Chicago.
Well, Paul George, the reason why I bring this up is I think Paul George is becoming a problem for the franchise.
You got to trade him. I don't care how good he is.
They're going to trade him. So I think it's really likely, and I want to throw this idea out to you guys, that they go up to the They go to the Lakers and say, you know what, we will give you Paul George. And there's got to be some money thrown around here somewhere. But Paul George for D'Angelo Russell. The Lakers take Paul George. Then they get the number three pick, and they draft that point guard that they're looking for in Alonzo Ball. Likelihood of that happening, or the Pacer, is this, I guess, not that specific trade, but is this right here, are we witnessing the last season of Paul George on the Pacers?
Oh, yeah. I think the Stevenson contract is a move to try to keep him. And I think they're going to do everything they can. Like, I don't think Paul George hates the Indiana. It stinks, like, for Paul George. Paul George remembers what it's like to be on a great team. I mean, they were a game away from the finals. And then it hasn't really been there since. If you're the Pacers, I mean, you know how I am. I never advocate trading talent of that capacity. Like, Paul George is amazing. He's a superstar. And it stinks because his value is low, because I think most people assume he's leaving Indy. The problem is, if you're Indiana, besides Miles Turner, you don't really have much of anything right now.
You rebuild around Turner, though.
Well, that's what I mean. I'm saying you're obviously not trading Miles Turner because he's the one young guy you have and the one guy you want to build around. So while I don't advocate trading Paul George, if you are convinced that you're going to lose him for nothing, which I feel like you have to be with everything he's been saying to the media and with how, you know, intense it was around the deadline with Paul George this year, you know, it's one of the few instances where I almost, you know, pull the trigger. If you can get something from the Lakers, some kind of package of like Russell and maybe a Randall or something like that, a young assets or a pick, something to restock the cupboard, because that's just the reality of what they have to do in Indy. Like, there's just there's nothing really of value in Indy right now beyond George and Turner, and you're not going to trade Turner.
I mean, Teague's there. Has he lost all of his value at this point?
I don't think it's high.
Teague's a free agent at the end of the year. I mean, this
and
is
it's like, a heavy point guard league.
Yeah.
Look, Larry. Well, yeah, but there aren't a lot of free agents, free agent point guards coming up in this year's free agent class. So
deep draft.
Yeah, it is a deep draft. But if you're Larry Bird, you know, and you go and you trade away Jan Mahimi and you sign a Jeff Teague and you signed a Monte Ellis a couple seasons ago, you have Thad Young, you know, he's a decent defender, but you sign in Al Jefferson. And you just say, you know what, we're going to run and gun, but we're going to play zero defense. Part of this has to fall on, you know, management right here,
oh,
right?
Oh, it does.
Getting lines that have zero defense around Paul George, because Paul George is a defensive player. While it's important to get the most that you can out of offense from him, you cannot change completely the identity of the team.
Well, and that's why it was confusing. You know, they let Vogel go, and the whole motto from the front office is we're gonna run, we're gonna shoot three-pointers and do all the things we're seeing around the league right now. But then you go and sign an Al Jefferson and some of these other players that don't really fit what you're trying to do. So the roster they've assembled doesn't really make sense. You know, I credit Larry Bird for trying to put a competitive roster around Paul George to get him to try to stay. Unfortunately, it hasn't worked the way they wanted it to. You know, you just can't really depend on Monta Ellis for much of anything at this point. Jeff Teague is fine, but I also think they underestimated how important George Hill was to that team. And they're just at the point where, you know, even if they make the playoffs, you're looking at a team that's under 500 right now. They're not really that good at all. They're just, you know, the bottom of the East is just, yikes.
Yeah, no, and I agree. I think a lot of what they did with Frank Vogel was they just felt that the team needed a change. Like, they were stuck in that limbo area, and although now they're back in the eighth spot, so I guess it didn't really help them get out of the limbo area. But I think they just wanted to change. They wanted to try something new and see if they could get something else going. And, I mean, sadly, I think it changed too much, and now you're hearing Paul George upset, you know, and wanting out, I mean, you're going to have to live with that decision, you know?
Yeah, just try to get anything at this point.
Well,
like, try to get value, try to get some young guys, try to get a pick, you know, rebuild through the draft like we've talked about. This is a deep draft, so this is one where you can hopefully get lucky and snag a franchise guy.
Let me ask this, too, and I kind of want to take it back because we were talking about the Pacers, Bulls, and the Heat, and you were talking about how the Pacers have a pretty hard schedule going forward. The Bulls have a really easy one. The Heat don't really have an easy schedule either. If you look at it, they play the Nuggets, the Hornets, I mean, they're pretty close to about the same level, in my opinion.
The Hornets aren't out, though, so they're still going to be competing.
Then you play the
Hornets are two back.
Right. Then you play the Raptors. Then you play the Wizards. Then you play the Cavs. And then you play the Wizards again. So if you had to choose between the Heat or Pacers to make it into the playoffs, which one are you choosing based on their schedule, I guess?
Well, the Heat are playing more inspired right now, I think. You know, they dropped a bad one to the Knicks the other night, which is a problem. Like, you need to win those games if you're Miami. But at the same time, I mean, you got to credit to Spo. He's got the guys playing. They're all playing hard. I have more faith in them to gut it out than Indiana, who's just kind of looked lifeless on offense at times.
Okay.
Indiana on the road is 11-27.
Mm-hmm.
The Pacers are 3-7 in the last 10 compared to 5-5 from the Heat. At this point, and Kevin and I were kind of talking about it a couple of days ago, the Heat might just be a good team.
Oh, that's what you got. You were texting about that as I was sleeping.
Yeah, they might just be a good team. And here's the thing. The Pacers might just be a garbage team.
Yeah. I mean, that's just the way it's kind of fallen.
They're not one of these worst teams in the league. I think the Pacers are going to get in. Or, well, I guess I don't know how much I trust Chicago, even with the easy schedule. I do think Chicago is going to get in. I don't think the other teams that are knocking, Detroit's not going to get in. I watched Detroit-Milwaukee the other night, and they were in overtime, and Detroit needed that win so bad. It was just like one of those like season defining wins, and it was such Detroit luck. Like, Chris Middleton took a 3-pointer, he missed it. Detroit had a chance to grab the board, they couldn't get it. It bounced right back out to Middleton. He had the wide open 3-pointer and buried it, and it was essentially the dagger. And just Detroit, man, everything has fallen off the wheels for them this year. So yeah, I mean, I guess I think Miami and I mean Chicago should get in. You know, I don't want to rule Indy out either. It's just, oh, man. Like, Milwaukee, at least with this bottom of this Eastern Conference and Atlanta, too, I can say, well, Milwaukee's been missing Jabari Parker, so there's a legitimate reason they've been banged up. Atlanta's really been slumping without Paul Millsap, so injuries playing into a factor there. So I think they're better than their records represent right now, but, oh, those last two spots are just brutal.
Taking this over to the West, we talked about the Nurkic injury a bit before, but you're looking at that 8 seed right now. Obviously, the Blazers have a little bit of a cushion compared to the Nuggets, but the Blazers' remaining schedule, they play the Suns, the Wolves, the Jazz, the Wolves, the Jazz, the Spurs. That's a little bit of a gimme, though, because it's the end of the season, and the Pelicans close it all out.
Yeah.
Whereas the Nuggets, they play the Heat, Pelicans, Rockets, Pelicans, Thunder, Mavericks, who are actually kind of a feisty little team, given the credit.
Yeah, absolutely.
and the Thunder to close out the season. But that Nurkic injury, that's not kind for them. They have a realistic chance of making it in and getting that 8 spot.
One of the things I wanted to point out to you, I thought this was pretty interesting, is so they started using Nurkic for screens so that Dame and CJ could get around and drive the lane. And since All-Star, he was 5th in the league for screen assists. So that was a huge part of their game. It really brought him up. So I think they're really going to miss him. It's going to be hurtful because they don't have a Plumlee just to kind of plug in.
Well, the thing, too, is as of right now, Portland has a 2-game cushion. And the reality is there are only a few games left. I think Portland with that schedule is good enough, even without Nurkic, to win a handful of them. Where with Denver, it is a lot tough. I mean, you look at their next game is against Miami. Miami's going to battle. Like, that's a game they have to win, but Miami's not going to just roll over. They're fighting for seeding, too, as we just talked about. You know, against New Orleans, they need to win that. They need to. I mean, if I'm Denver, you have to, at the minimum, win both games against New Orleans. I think you need to beat Dallas. I think you need to beat Miami. And I think you need to split one of the OKC games to even have a chance. But you probably almost need to win out with the way. I mean, Portland would really have to slump here towards the end.
I mean, I think it's going to be really reliant on how they recover from this injury.
I think if Nurkic is playing, it's not like I think Portland's in. Like, I don't think this is a question if Nurkic is healthy, but that does, you know, Portland wasn't doing that great until Nurkic arrived.
Who would you rather see?
I think Portland with Nurkic. I think with Dame and CJ and Nurkic, there's just more firepower there. I think they're the type of team that can, you know, they're not going to beat the Warriors, but they can make it entertaining because they'll bomb away. And I think Nurkic will have his way in the paint against the Warriors. I mean, the Nuggets are fun. Don't get me wrong. Like, the Nuggets are super fun with Jokic and with the young guards they have. Jamal Murray and Gary Harris and Will Barton are all just, you know, super fun to watch. But, I don't think Denver is. I think Denver's 1 year off. I think next year and from then on out, they're going to be in the playoffs for a bit.
Let me ask you this. If you're the Warriors looking down, who would you rather play? Would you rather play the Trailblazers or would you rather play the Nuggets? Because Nurkic, if he is able to come back from this injury, do you really want, you know, Kevin Durant's comeback to be against this feisty little Trailblazers team where Draymond Green's having to bang down low against Nurkic.
I think if you're the Warriors, that you go into that saying, hey, we just roasted these guys last year.
Yeah.
I think if you're the Warriors, though, you go into it saying, hey, we're going to roast the Nuggets. I guess I feel a little bit bad for the Nuggets because that franchise has tried so hard to rebuild, to get into the playoffs. And I know how it feels to be just a game or two shy.
Well, yeah, it stinks. Like, it's disappointing if you're Denver that you're not going to get into the playoffs. But I also think if you're Denver, like, look at what you have. I think you need to look at the grand scheme of things. And you have guys like Jokic. You have Murray, you know, who we've mentioned. You have Gary Harris, who's turning into a real part of this team's future. And I think there are just other guys. You know, you'll have to make decisions on people like Gallinari, on Wilson Chandler, you know, some of the more veteran guys there. But you have a good, solid young core that you can build around. Denver's done a really good job in the lottery of finding value in these later picks. I mean, both Nurkic and Jokic were late, late picks. So I think you have to be excited. Look in the grand scheme of things. Like, Denver is set up with a few moves that they need to make to be good for a long time. I think that's easier to sell to me if I'm a Denver fan than kind of what it's been in the past few years, really since Melo left. When they were the 3 seed with Iggy, that was a fun Denver team. I was disappointed they got bounced the first round.
I'm a huge Denver guy. I really like Denver. Like, they're the team that I really like to follow in the West. I'll be honest though, like, I guess it's also gonna come down to, like, looking at the schedules. I think it's gonna come down to when players are resting. Like with the Spurs, are they really gonna be trying on April 10th?
No.
Are the Jazz really gonna be trying April 8th? Because they're gonna be. I mean, depending on if they can get, like, you know, a seed higher or a seed lower, like, maybe the Jazz will be trying. That's not going to be an easy game for the Trailblazers if they're trying, right?
No, I think we have a couple of matchups right now that are pretty locked in. In the West, you have the 4-5 with the Jazz and Clippers. That's a real close to being a lock right now. It also looks like in the West, the Rockets Thunder, that 3-6 matchup is pretty close. So a couple of those teams. Well, I mean, if you're talking about the Thunder, for example, Russell Westbrook's going to continue chasing that that triple-double record, so he's going to be playing. But, you know, at the same time, for talking about the Rockets, James Harden's still going to be playing too because, you know, he has that wrist, but he wants that MVP nod.
Yeah, he said he's going to play through the injury, so.
Yeah, maybe he should not.
Maybe get ready for that.
Especially because, did you guys hear Draymond Green's comments the other night?
I did not, no.
Harden, I guess, did something to a game, and Draymond after the game, which Draymond, why would you say this out loud? But Draymond goes, oh yeah, I definitely, like, hit him on the wrist on purpose knowing it was injured. And it's like, dude, we know, like, that's just, like, everybody does
that
in games,
yeah.
Unfortunately.
People
but,
do
like,
that.
But, like, don't say that out loud. What are you doing, Draymond?
It's like, not to bring it to, like, a personal thing, but our softball team, our company softball team, they're really strict about the kinds of bats that you use. Like, it has to be a softball bat. There's, like, this specific sticker that has to be on it. They handed me this bat, and I grabbed it. I'm like, man, this one's really light, like, really loud. And then I swung, and I hit the ball, and I hit it so far. And I was like, damn, I like that one. That one's really light. And they're all staring at me, and the ump comes over, and he picks up the bat, and he's looking at it. He goes, you're not allowed to use this one. I was like, you guys are trying to cheat? Seriously?
Man,
company softball, and they're cheating,
dude. If you cheat in company softball, I just have a lot of questions about your priorities.
I mean, what are you gonna do, you know?
Well, thank you everybody for listening to this episode of the Driving Dish NBA podcast. We appreciate you guys as always. Make sure you check out 16windsthering.com. That is the network we are a part of. Follow us. Keep up with all of our latest episodes at our website, drivingdishpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at drivingdishnba, on Facebook, like us at drivingdishnba podcast, and on Instagram, follow us at drivingdishpodcast.
And if you support us, please support our sponsor, SeatGeek. Download them now. They're free in your app store.
I think we've done enough dancing for today, so why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Starside.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Good to know.
Get up. Hey!
Let's go while we're young!
Alright, I think they get the point.